Morgan on trumpet opens up Cornbread. That's the title of this track, and it's the title track of his 1965 album. And appearing on that album, some really great heavyweights: Jackie McLean on alto sax, Hank Mobley, that's one of my favorites, on tenor, Herbie Hancock on piano, Larry Ridley on bass, and Billy Higgins on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Utrecht Lead, and a packed program today. Most of it my own opinion. I'm not ashamed to say that I'm hogging a lot of time today. That's the intention. As we speak, there's an effort by Representative Al Green from Texas to at least get a resolution passed to impeach the president, Donald Trump. But he's run into a brick wall here in the person of Nancy Pelosi, who is the minority leader of the party. I mean, she is the leader of the party, and she is a major force in Congress itself. She has advised that he table his action. We'll see how that goes. But that was what he had intended to get done today. Well, there are more victims from Congress popping up in this wide net that is being cast by this burgeoning so-called movement of women looking for, quote, justice, unquote. And my point today is that it isn't justice at all that they're after. It appears to be more like vengeance. And beyond that, I want to raise some questions about what exactly is the role of Congress in all of this, because to my estimation, they are way beyond they're way beyond where they ought to be, their boundaries in matters of law. I'll get to that right away. As we know, yesterday, Congressman John Conyers, who had served in Congress for 53 years, served the population of Detroit for the most part, just decided to quit. He was under intense pressure to do so, and it stemmed from an allegation against him by a former staff person who said that he made untoward advances to her, and to the point where it constituted, in her mind, sexual harassment. Okay, supposedly a settlement was signed in this debacle, and it remained secret for a while until it surfaced about 2 weeks ago. And then the intense pressure came for Conyers to resign. Okay. I have problems with how this was done. And I think it begs a number of very important questions. I had talked before about the lawyers involved here should know better. When a settlement is arrived at between or among parties, the number one agreement is that people shut up, that they have nothing further to say about the settlement, because the settlement is essentially an instrument, a legal instrument, one presumes, that binds the parties to silence. And that whatever they worked out as terms between and among each other are agreeable to all parties involved, and the settlement itself represents resolution of whatever the difficulty was, whatever the complaint was, whatever the mess was. A settlement represents it's over. We know, for example, in cases we've covered here, and I've commented about settlements precisely from this point of view, where we have settlements between the families of people killed by police and the police department. The number one condition of the settlement is that the families of the deceased agree not to hold the police department liable for anything. And in exchange for an agreed upon sum of money, usually that's what it is, they not only will hold the police department harmless and the city harmless, but they also are not going to discuss the terms of the settlement. And they will regard the matter, that is the killing of their kid by the police officers, they would regard that as completely wiped out, totally off the map. It is as if it never happened. They're not going to talk about these things in public. They're not going to accuse the police department further of any other abuse. They're just going to settle, take the money, and they're done. And they would consider this grievous matter, which actually it is, the lawyers representing the families would tend to advise that it might be a better thing to settle with the city if the amount of money being offered is attractive, and they can, of course, get their cut, and that will serve as justice. I have remarked about this many, many times, to the point of demanding that before any community marshals itself to protest in support of the family that then presents itself as wanting justice, before they do that, the question has to be asked and answered: are you interested in justice or are you interested in money? If you're interested in justice, we're walking with you. If you're interested in money, just let us know, and you go ahead and you do what you want to do. I have repeatedly attacked this business of the lawyers for families, because the families don't know much about these things. The lawyers for families posturing, saying it is about justice, when in fact, for the right sum of the money, they will call it even Steven and go away. All right. The same thing happens here. A legislator like John Conyers, 88 years old, 53 years representing his constituency, is subjected to such unusual and aggressive pressure. And in my view, I would use the word not only unethical, but illegal. It's illegal what has been done here, and that precipitated his basically giving up, buckling under the pressure of the lawyers first, representing their client, the person complaining or who has complained about Conyers, and then the pressure of the public, the pressure of the entire Congress. This is a man who, even though is 88, had planned to run for re-election next year. So that's off the table. That's not going to happen anymore. What is offensive here is that the lawyers for the complainant have no respect at all and have totally run roughshod over the law. It may be of no consequence to them that to this day, John Conyers has not been charged with a crime. He hasn't been charged with a crime. Which brings me to my point, my second point. And that is, we have now to question the role of Congress in this matter, in adjudicating this matter. If, in fact, the lawyers representing this woman who says she was harassed by Conyers, or any other person who comes forward with a claim, why isn't it referred to a court, a real live court, where you have real live jurors put in a box examining the evidence and then making a verdict? But this is not happening. And this is what is so alarming. If this constitutes a crime, and it does constitute a crime, why is Congress adjudicating this matter? Congress has arrogated to itself the authority to act like a court. And it has been going on for decades. They decide whether you're innocent or guilty. And they have no authority to do so, except the authority they have given themselves. And they gave themselves this authority to essentially hush up things that they don't want the public to know, and to settle things behind, you know, closed doors that properly belong, in my view, in a court of law. A crime has been committed. Guess what they do now? You go to the office of whatever, ethical blah blah, which is itself a joke. The Office of Congressional Ethics, as if there's any to be found in Congress. But the Office of Congressional Ethics now takes charge of a complaint which essentially is a criminal complaint. And criminal complaints should be handled by a court of law. These people are not judges. They didn't go to judge school. They're just hacks. And for decades, this is how they have settled their matters behind closed doors because, and here is the racial element, most of these crimes and offenses involved white people, white members of Congress. And in these matters, the attitude was, look, well, you know, you belong to the club. Let's see if we could settle this thing quietly, whatever it is they were charged with. But yesterday, we learned of the sentencing of a black woman who represented Jacksonville, Florida. A portion of Jacksonville, Florida, I should say. That's Corrine Brown. There was an accusation that she did something wrong, that she stole money from a bogus fund she established, and it amassed up to $800,000 in donations to just the Clintons. It amassed a lot of money. And according to the charge, now this was a federal charge, she broke the law. There was no suggestion anywhere. Come to our offices at 4 o'clock, and we'll sit down and talk about this and see how could we could resolve this. Everybody was clear. This is a crime. Okay? And they don't have the authority to adjudicate this kind of crime, not this level. This is not an ethical problem. This is a crime. And so it went to court. And 18 jurors were assembled to hear the case, which they did. They voted for conviction, which they did. She's sentenced as of yesterday, which has occurred. That, to me, whether we agree or don't agree, it followed the natural line. That's how it's supposed to work. Her crime was not considered an ethical infraction. It was considered a crime. And I'm saying the same thing should apply here in the case of the congressman. Conyers, if in fact a crime did occur, or a crime is alleged to have occurred, then according to none other than Nancy Pelosi, she said that Conyers deserves what? Due process. Now, you don't get due process when there's no crime. She said Conyers deserves due process, but he hasn't been charged with a crime. And how is it now that this due process is to be granted by an administrative office of the government? You see, I'm not crazy here. I think I'm thinking logically here. You're an office of the government charged with the responsibility of seeing to administrative infractions, ethical infractions, that kind of thing. But when it comes to a crime that is covered by a criminal statute, it shouldn't be too much of an exaggeration to say that you should know that you're way out of bounds. You're acting totally outside the law. A, there's been a settlement here. And the settlement binds both Conyers and the person accusing him of sexual harassment. It binds both of them to terms they both agree to. It cannot be undone. They have agreed to a settlement. They both have not agreed that this is a criminal matter. The accuser took money. And she agreed that that was what would make her whole. Give me the money. And I act like this didn't happen. That's one of the terms. Now she is resuscitated and revived to conduct or to help conduct a public extortion plot against a longstanding member of Congress. Now, I'm not there. I don't know whether he did it or he didn't do it. I'm saying what the facts are. And what's supposed to happen? If Congressman Conyers, in the estimation of this body, the Office of Congressional Ethics, acted way outside the law, it was incumbent upon that office to say, we can't judge you. This is way out of our hands. This constitutes something governed by criminal statutes. We are not charged with that. So they would advise the young lady that her option is to take this to criminal court, and they can see separately whether Conyers in any way committed any ethical infractions, right? But they said no. There are no criminal actions here. And they knew there was a settlement. And you can't undo a settlement. She freely entered into a settlement. And she freely committed to, through the settlement, to recognize that nothing happened. She got paid. Now, if there is something to query, it would be, did Congressman Conyers use government funds to compensate her in the course of settling this matter with her? Now, that's a whole different question. But the issue, the central issue here of whether he is guilty, now these are the words they're using. He's guilty of harassing her without proof, without a trial. I have maintained, as you know, you can't deny it, my position in these kinds of cases is, including the Brawley case, where people are saying, well, she's guilty of lying about it, and, you know, we should just dismiss the case. I said, no, we don't know. But if the case were to be put to trial, everybody would know. You put some jurors in a box, because that is the American way. You put regular citizens in a box, and you start trial. In no time, you will know who's lying and who's telling the truth. This is not, to quote Winston Churchill, this is not an enigma wrapped in a puzzle, wrapped in a mystery. This is easily discerned. Who is telling the truth and who's lying? But they're not doing that. The lawyers for these women coming forward are not doing that. They are on their own conducting a war of defamation and constitutional deprivation for the person accused. The person accused has no chance of winning anything in that environment. I will go even further to say, I'm now beginning to suspect that these lawyers are in cahoots with some political entity specifically targeting these people for specific reasons. They're working hand in glove. The long line of people now who have come forward, women most specifically, putting accusing fingers at this person and that person and the other person, who, by the way, if you happen to check, are in the midst of campaigns. This is not accidental, in my view. There is a collusion of interest going on. And I indict these lawyers openly. They should be disbarred. Why? They know better. They know better. Here is a clear-cut case in which all legal grounds have been covered, whether you like them or not. whether you think it was the right thing to do or not. But all of the requirements were met when that settlement was worked out. Who gave you the power to undo a settlement? Which court? The young lady agreed to take the money. She was not necessarily swayed by this compelling need for justice. She wanted the money. She got the money, and she was supposed to go away and forget this thing ever happened. That was the mutual agreement of a settlement. But now, the court of public opinion was encouraged to participate in a conclusion about the guilt of John Conyers and the total innocence of this young lady accusing him. Again, I say, I don't know what happened. We are not parties and privy to all the details, but we don't have to be. The facts speak for themselves. You have Gloria Allred, and you have her daughter, who is part of this whole so-called movement, which essentially started as a battle between white women and white men, battling for power and trying to find ways to achieve equality through vengeance. That's not right. And what they're doing, apart from destroying an effort that began so heartfully, so sincerely by an African-American woman in Harlem, Tarana Burke, in 1997, started a little piece of the response within the means to respond to victims of sexual abuse and violence in Harlem. None of these white women showed up to say, here's my $20. I understand what you're doing. And what did she call it? She called it a place where people can come and be received without judgment, without fear. And this is no big money going on here. This is what she decided to do. She was, in fact, you can say, the originator of what they're calling Me Too. White woman just came in and took it over. Took over the concept, took over even the whole attitude about advocating for the rights of victims, but genuinely so. These women come in and they're advocating for the rights primarily for themselves. Or they say, yes, we are for women and so forth. But have you seen a respectable number of women of color being invited or being attended to in the same way that Tarana Burke had intended and still is carrying on with that work? No. These are self-centered, self-absorbed people, and they are out for revenge. But they will settle for money. If the money's right, they'll be quiet and they'll go away. But to get to that, because many of them have failed to do the work, which is part of what I was hoping that the so-called movement will devote a great deal of attention to prepare people, especially women, who might be more exposed to this kind of crime than others, to prepare them, educate them about what they ought to do. But that's not what they're after. They are after bringing down the men. And again, I say the indications are quite obvious. I have to just turn my phone. I forget to turn it down all the time. It is quite obvious to me that in many cases, these folks are not just operating independently. They are being encouraged to go after this one and after that one. And suddenly we have people coming forward making claims. Because there's word that these matters would be settled. And depending on clout of the congressperson, it could be hushed up. And you'll get your money. In the case of John Conyers, I fully suspect, I don't know the gory details, I fully suspect that after this young lady settled and took the money, she began to think about it. Hey, I have by the short and curlies. And I only got $27,000. You know, I could be encouraged to revive this case and get more. Because it's not coming to a criminal court, you see. The matter is being settled right there in D.C. Maybe a call was made. That she has thought about this, and she wishes true justice equals more money. And that's how this whole thing blew up again. So let's revisit here what's important. One, this concerns the authority of the Office of Congressional Ethics, which in all of these cases, except, as I said, the one involving Corrine Brown, in the cases that are known in the public, these are cases that correctly belong in a court. The office is an administrative arm of the government. It is not a legal arm of the government. It should not be in the business of adjudicating any kind of criminal cases or any kind of legal cases that belong elsewhere. For one thing, you can certainly argue a wholesale conflict of interest in doing that. Who are the people making the decisions? Who were the people making the decisions with respect to Conyers? Do they have an axe to grind? Or do their pals have an axe to grind and give them, you know, very strong hints that they shouldn't be too kind to him or anybody else? That's an open conflict of interest, period. These issues have to be looked at and immediately. Because in the end, it is not just between the parties. It's about what happens to Conyers' district. He removed himself from the committee that he chaired. 53 years, the most senior member of Congress. Whatever people think of him, I don't care about that. But it is important, if Nancy Pelosi could say, and you know Nancy is not working with a full team of mules here. Nancy Pelosi can correctly refer to the issue of due process. And then 2 days later, she says he must go, which is, of course, her reaction of feedback, the feedback being out in the public. Yes, let's, you know, lop his head off and let's forget about him and move on. She said, due process. He's entitled to due process. I say I agree. Did he get due process? Do any of these people feel responsible for the total dismemberment of a man who has not, I remind you, has not been charged with a crime? This is very serious to me. This is a total railroading, and with the aiding and abetting of these women, I'm sure, in many instances, and probably even in this one, a lot of things happened that would normally, if tried in a court of law, would constitute serious charges. But you didn't go that route. You took money. You agreed to a settlement. And there is no formal charge. There is no legal charge against this man. And because white women have moved in and dominated the discussion, whatever they say is now being catered to. They don't need trials anymore. You just need to point. Point at somebody and say, he did that. He did this to me. He did that to me. Well, did you report it? No. Years have gone by. Did you report it? No. Do you have any evidence? Now they have to go back and see what they could concoct as evidence. This is not the way it's supposed to be done. If you truly believed in the power of women and in increasing the power of women, increase their knowledge of what they are supposed to do in defense of themselves. But you see, they're working that old sexist trick of the poor, you know, helpless damsel in distress. I didn't know what to do. I was ashamed. I was embarrassed. Yeah, but you have a manual. You have a manual instructing you of the options you have in government. And you have other instructions as to what a victim of a crime, a person who considers herself as a victim of a crime, ought to do. Now, that's power. That is enhancing power. You don't teach women that they have automatic rights. And that whoever it is they point finger at has no rights at all. I've been through many of these cases where women are working a whole different program other than the empowerment of women. Some of them are working out the psychological leftovers of animosities that they have with men. And because they are involved, and I'm talking to you, Gloria Allred, even before you tend to the legal business of getting your ducks in a row in behalf of your client, you're in front of television cameras and microphones, and you flapping your lips, condemning whoever it is that your client has pointed a finger at. You have no regard for the law. You seem to know nothing about the laws as pertains to libel and slander and defamation. Yes, these things do exist. Not to mention what Nancy Pelosi mentioned. Due process. And you ram it into the public domain, and a compliant and emasculated press decide that you're making great sense. And even if, well, it's a mistake, yeah, we just go on. What could a black man in this day and age have to lose? What could he possibly have to lose? And you keep pressing that feminist button so as to encourage women to act as lawlessly as you are, to completely set aside what ought to be procedure. Basic, this is the stuff that a first year law student would know. A rhesus monkey should know this. You don't do these things. Let's sum up again what we ought to be thinking about these cases. And we ought to be publicly condemning this because it's not right. I've been saying that. It is not right. It is not the way you want to have a victory, because in the end, your clients will lose and the community will lose. You know what I'm responding to viscerally is that I know so many black and Latino men serving time in prison now, being falsely accused and not afforded any opportunity to defend themselves. No due process for them. When a black 15-year-old girl does point a finger, no due process at all for her. It's not necessary. Not necessary at all. I don't know John Conyers personally. I have met him several times. I don't know him personally. But it's not required for me to know him personally. The fact is, this is wrong. On so many counts, we have grievous harm be done here to this man. And we, as a community, we should not be silent. Women of conscience need to condemn this. This jaunt they're on of pointing fingers at people and automatically convicting them of whatever it is they feel to convict them of in the public eye. And you could go back to your well-appointed homes and feel confident that you have done something for women. You are so wrong. You're so disillusioned. And you're racist and you're sexist. Isn't that odd? Women who swear they're fighting against sexism are using all the old low-down tools of the old feminism and rejoicing that they netted another one today. They netted another one, a big one, a big fish caught in their nets. We should have no part of this in supporting any of this. We should be very vocal about our concerns that this movement is, in fact, it has started with the evisceration of people's rights. We should insist that that function, that particular function of the Office of Congressional Ethics, should be removed. They have no business acting like judges and juries. They have no business translating what should be a criminal situation into some administrative process. If it is administrative, there should be no reason that anybody should be compensated for anything. It's an administrative problem. But when you are doling out tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars secretly to compensate the so-called accuser in order to save face, and you're taking on a legal function, disguising it as an administrative function, you're out of whack. And you've been out of whack. And we see the racist implications here. This office has dealt very differently with whites in Congress. But now we have people like Nancy Pelosi saying, first, Congressman Conyers is an icon, she said, deserving of due process. 2 days later, the same person is saying, yes, he's got to go. And organizing within Congress to get Conyers out. Now, you and I know that there are legions of members of Congress with all kinds of very nasty resumes. Nobody's interested in making them go. Not at all. What they want to do is to see how they can help them stay by setting up a process through the Office of Congressional Ethics to redeem them without anybody knowing. We got a problem on our hands, and we have to solve it. Look, I ran late, as I did tell you I was going to. So the first thing is, questions can be asked also on Friday, but the lines are open right now for those of you who could get in before we sign off at 888-874-4888. And questions and comments that we can't get to today because of time, we certainly have Friday, our regular open forum. So this is what is angering me. And I share it with you because it is in part education. We have to understand how systems work. I keep saying that. And this is an exploration of how Congress works, how this newfound feminist political power is working or seems to be working. And what the fallout is. The fallout is we suffer. And we're seeing this racist element as well within this burgeoning movement. Which is why I made it a point to congratulate the women who organized a follow-up to the Women's March in January. They're trying to adopt a whole different attitude. And you will notice that not many white women in the feminist movements are open to guidance or tutelage from women of color. They're not well with it at all. The vast majority of people who are doing the work because they understand the consequences for their communities are women of color. And they have managed to do their work minus the, by the way, it's very unattractive work. It's very unsexy work. But they persevere because they are seriously and sincerely committed about these issues which are tearing our communities apart. This is not about women taking, some kind of refuge in their professional careers and causing great harm to people by refusing to understand what they are doing. They don't care about what they're doing. A victory by any means possible. And these are not good ways to win a victory. Not good ways at all. It indicates to me that there's such a desire to disempower other people that you do this in order to win a victory over them. Pat from Brooklyn, what are you thinking?
Oh, how you doing, Miss Eugene? How's everything with you?
Okay, I'm hanging in.
Good, good. I'm glad once again you bring such clarity to this whole particular situation. I'd just like to add something to this. Quite a while ago, there was an issue in the NFL and the National Organization of White Women. They were the ones who, in fact, put forth that case about having one of the football guys players fired. They didn't protest the NFL. What they did was they wrote a real nasty letter to their advertisers. And as a result of this, three lawyers from the National Organization of White Women are on the board of the National Football League now. So I just want to let you know that part of this is spearheaded with the NFL. And as you see things progress, like you said, every other day there's something new with this organization. And you're quite clear, they do not represent women of color. And this is nothing more than a witch hunt of white women.
I happen to agree. I agree with you. And this is my concern. I certainly think, and I'm sure that you do, that women really need to come up in the world. You know, we really need that. But not
true.
Using this kind of tactics. This is not...
Not at
this
all.
Is not
at all. I think, actually, when you think about it, it's actually a setback. And they may have a few victories now, but eventually they're going to get what they're going to get. And I'm not going to be on their sideline championing them. Because as we say around the way, what makes you laugh today is going to make you cry tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling. And I agree with your sentiments. I think we really have to pose it to them directly and let them know you are not in line with our way of thinking. You are not in line with what we think is a good way, a helpful way to go about solving a problem. You're not doing it. And you're going to be causing, like you said, and I agree, major backlash. I did say that from the very beginning. The people who will hurt the most with these kinds of techniques that they are employing will be women themselves. Thanks for calling in. We have room for one more call before we go. If we don't get it, we'll just delay and defer our discussion for questions and so forth for Friday. I wanted to bring these things to your attention because they bother me so. And it's because I've seen these things. And you can't help but take those lessons and apply them to what's happening now. And you see what the moves are. It's not pleasant, but it's been something that has been unsaid for a long time about the relationship between white women and black women, women who want power and will do anything to get it, even if they destroy other people, miscast the issue or the problem, and, you know, all for self-glory and self-gratification and for self-advancement. The danger is that it is also a historical truth that what the white masses do, whether they're male or female, people tend to imitate. So I'm just trying to forestall that possibility happening here. We don't want people incorporating these methods, these attitudes, which are unhelpful and downright destructive. We don't want that to happen anymore. It's already in our communities and we're dealing with them, but we don't need that magnified now. And we don't need to follow the so-called leaders. That brings us to the end of the program today. I hope it was instructive. You let me know at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. And stay tuned. Coming up next, Ring of Fire Radio, a great program. You can reach me again at leadstories@gmail.com. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.